Welcome, everyone. This is Pam Drennan, and this is the Cosmic Contact Show, coming to you from the RBR Network. We're located out of Memphis, Tennessee. We're glad to have you join us this evening, and I'm talking to you from Redmond, Washington. Anyone can access the show simply by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/Renford live, or by going to the archives, which is the on-demand section, which is available shortly after the show finishes. Now, if you're not online, you have someone who wants to hear the show, all you have to do is call in. The number is 347-838-9142. If you want to ask a question to our guest speaker, use the same number, 347-838-9142. Press one button and Annie, the moderator, will get to you and will get you in as soon as possible. Well, I'm excited about our guest this evening. I've had Drew on the show before. Drew Nicholson is an amazing man, and he's got a lot of great things to share with us, and we're going to have a wonderful talk with him. But before we do that, I want to tell you about the RBR Network, and we do have a whole week of wonderful shows that you can call in and listen in to the guests, special guests that we offer. My show, of course, is every Monday at 6:30 at Central Standard Time. And then Tuesday, the I Am Well show, that's at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. The Night Search show is at 9:30. And in the p.m., that's with Eddie Middleton from Memphis. The No show is at 7. And that's on Wednesday. That's with Reverend McMillan. And the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program, that is live at 8:30 p.m. on Central Standard Time, and that's hosted by James Renford Powell from Memphis. Thursday is the Progressive News Weekly at 5:30, and it's hosted by Daryl Clark from New York. The Searchers Roadmap Show is at 1 p.m., and that's hosted by Rhonda Harrison on Friday. The Dream Vision 7 show is at 3 p.m. on Friday, hosted by Deborah Bouvet. Saturday, the Soul Town, the Sound of Music, is broadcast at 3 p.m., and it's hosted from Memphis, Tennessee, by Reginald Jenkins. And the Dream Vision 7 show is at 3 p.m. on Sunday from Boston. So you see, we have a big lineup of great shows all week long, so you can check us out. But be sure and check me out every Monday. And at 6:30 Central Standard Time, people out here in Washington, it's 4:30. Well, my special guest this evening is, again, Drew Nicholson. And I want everyone to get ready because he is so interesting, and he's going to give us a great show this evening. We'll talk about some things that you may know some about, but you're probably like me, you don't know that much about. But he, Drew is a Kumana, which means the student of the ancient healing and spiritual shamanism of Hawaii, and it's really known by its modern or Western label, which is Huna. Drew's topic this evening is about her shadow, the anima, the female, and the animus, the male, and what blocks us from having emotionally fulfilling relationships. Besides being a practitioner of Jungian psychology, Drew is a certified trainer of Neuro-Linguistic Programming, NLP, and trainer of hypnosis. He's trained people to do this, so that's not just doing it yourself. His metaphysical infrastructure, astrology, and related disciplines. Drew presently lives in Seattle area and is starting a new career as a writer and publisher. So please call in, 347-838-9142, and Annie, the moderator, will get you in. Okay, let's bring Drew in.
Hello, Pam.
Hi, Drew. Well, good evening. Glad you're here.
Good evening to you. I'm glad to be here. Always fun to have a chat.
Yes, it is. And it's a great chat. There are so many things I've, you know, even as I look at the little bio that I wrote for you. And first of all, so people will know more about your background, you know, could you explain a little bit more about the Humana, student of the healing, ancient healing and spiritual shamanism of Hawaii, and maybe what got you into that and how you maybe use that in your daily life?
I can do that. And with respect, it's actually How Mana, and which is a great way to start, which is that in Hawaii there are these studies of ancient wisdom and ancient practices, and in my school, which is run by a white guy, all these ancient practices have been made available to those of us who have been trained and brought up in a more Western tradition. And so one of the challenges is that we have to take English and apply the spellings of English to Hawaiian words to begin to understand how to communicate. And so one way of looking at what I study is that we look at ancient wisdom and ancient teachings where we have an unbroken lineage that goes back around 1,000 years that we know of, if not longer. And we have to look at it from the perspective of who we are today and how we can understand these things. The way I got into this is I started studying personal development and who I am and how you find out who you are. Back in college, actually, when I considered going into psychology as a field, I ended up going into computer science because I figured that between my interests of psychology and music and computers, one of them would actually allow me to put food on the table. So I went with the one that did that. I later became interested in neurolinguistic programming, and I had an opportunity to study it in Sedona, Arizona in 2001. And then I studied it again with another school in 2005. And this school is the one that is also run by my kumu, my teacher in Hawaii, Dr. Matt James. And so that is how I got introduced to Huna, the idea of Hawaiian spirituality. I'd already become a Reiki master. And this is a school that goes into more depth, covers more topics, and has more ways of looking at how we discover who we are and how we create our experience of the world around us. And I'm always looking for more tools and more ways to understand myself so that I can share more of who I am with others and be who I am in the world. So any school or any study or any line of thought or even work is really about deciding who we are, discovering that person, and then learning how to express that in the world. Don't you think?
Well, absolutely. And, I think a lot of people don't even try to figure out who they are until they get older and they know that things aren't quite working out the way, need to understand more about how they think and work and what they want and their desires and everything. So when you started studying psychology and understanding about, the anima, the female, and the animus, the male. And when we talked the other day, very interesting. And again, you called it a shadow. Could you explain the shadow, what you mean by this?
Yes. So Carl Jung was one of the founders or developers of the field of psychology. So the two big names in psychology to begin with were William James in America and Sigmund Freud in Europe. And Carl Jung, I believe he's Austrian, was one of Freud's students. And at some point in the early 1900s, Jung split from Freud because Jung discovered that there has to be a perspective other than our own, which is how Freud did his development of psychology, where he saw everything that occurred in the world as he saw it and didn't really get that everybody is different. And Jung started to discover that he would have dreams or mystical experiences or other ways of recognizing the world. Now, he's also a smart enough man to know that if he went out in the world and said, well, I had a dream and it said X and this is the way it is, no one would have listened to him. So he rather cleverly hid what he was learning into research and a guise that fit the scientific materialism of the day. And it wasn't until later that Jung was, shall we say, outed as someone who was something of a mystic. And from him, we have the idea of the collective unconscious, and we have an idea of the shadow, and then the anima and the animus. And so if we look at who we are as a person, Freud's model was that there's an ego, a superego, and an id, and they're all like these competing impulses within us that need to be contained and restrained and held down, and that given the chance, they will do bad things. And so that's kind of the way he lived his life. Let's not forget that the man was a cocaine addict, among other things. So he kind of saw the world this way. Whereas Jung basically saw the people of the world as being in a place of knowing that they're not complete, and they're looking for a sense of wholeness. And so one aspect of wholeness is the shadow. When a child is first born, they really don't have a sense of separateness. They're just, you know, they're this nascent consciousness beginning to develop an awareness. And as soon as they develop an awareness that they have an identity, they're also aware that there's a separation. So they create the separation of there's me and there's not me. And so we develop what we call the shadow, which is I'm what I am and everything else is not me. And then through a series of experiences, people tend to develop an emotional charge or rejection of the things that are not them. And they will say, that person's behavior, I would never do that. Or that person who's like that, that is not me. I'm who I am. And we develop this idea of separation. So not only do we know who we are and we know who we're not, but because as these individuals, we feel, you know, people tend to feel as though they're incomplete, they're not whole, or there's something wrong with them. So we first develop this idea of the shadow, where we put all the things that are not us, including the things we would reject about us because we have some idea that they're bad. Then the next thing that people develop as their children is what we call the anima and the animus. And so a man will develop an idea of an anima, a feminine ideal, and a woman will develop an idea of an animus, a masculine ideal. And the anima and the animus are extremely important to us when we get into a relationship, because this is something we begin to develop from childhood and develops all through our teen years until we start to have relationships with members of the opposite sex or the same sex or however it is we have relationships. But we have this idea of what is the ideal opposite for me. And the ideal opposite for me is actually all those things that we would want to see in ourselves but choose not to. And so then this is how the shadow and the anima and animus become very important to us. The shadow is those things that are in us, but we reject, and so we put them outside of us. And the anima and animus are those things that we don't see as in us and we are attracted to. So when two people get into a relationship, it's typically their anima and animus that are getting together. So if, let's say, I see a woman and I see that she's just perfect for me, and I start to do foolish things like spend all my money to entertain her. This would be a rather foolish thing for a man to do, but it's because I see this person as being the most ideal thing ever, and I would feel horrible if I didn't have her in my life. I'll do whatever I think I need to do to keep her around. And the same thing for a woman. If she gets together with a man and she sees him as the ideal partner for herself, then she does things that might not be in her own best interest, but she's forgetting who she is or what she wants for a period of time. So we get together and we don't see these, you know, these people we get with as who they actually are. We see them through our filters of our anima, our animus, and there's all this emotional charge and desire. You know, sometimes there's a lot of sex or a lot of whatever it is that makes the relationship go. And then over time, and this is why it's called the honeymoon period, over a period of time, we begin to notice that these people aren't actually who we imagine them to be. And at some point, the relationship gets to a point where we see enough of the other person as they are that we can no longer hold on to the fiction that they are the ideal. They're something else. And then we then begin to decide we either have to see them who they are and accept that, or this doesn't work for me, and it comes to a blazing end. I'm sure everybody's experienced this at least once in their lives. I know I have at least once or twice or some number of times. I'm not going to try to figure it out.
Well, you
and then
know,
with
I agree
each
with
cycle.
You. Yes.
Oh, go ahead.
I just said I agree with you because I have done this several times, and it's like, so this is just the way relationships start. This is how they work. We meet someone, we're all gaga over them, and, you know, this is all I've been looking for, the love of my life and everything. And then on down the road, it starts to change.
Exactly.
And it's because we spend enough time with them to say, well, maybe they're not, you know, that perfect person, or we see them in a different light.
Yes. In fact, that's a very good way of looking at it, is that it's, the light is different in that we cease to see them through the light of wish, of imagination, of our own light, and we start to see them through their light, you know, who they are. And It's actually the fact that we individually view ourselves as incomplete that creates the attraction in the relationship. And if we're lucky, we might actually grow as we go through these cycles. So if I get together with somebody who is, let's suppose I reject in myself as a man the essential aspect of femininity that I might view as some sort of nurturing compassion. Okay? So I don't view myself as being having that capacity. It's impossible for me, but I find it incredibly attractive because it's part of how to become a complete human, that you can have compassion, you could nurture something. I mean, even the most hardcore of rednecks can have a dog that he loves, right? And he'll take care of the dog. So suppose he gets together with a woman and he sees her as being the most nurturing, compassionate woman imaginable, and he loves her. Now, he ignores the fact she's got three kids that she beats mercilessly on a daily basis, but he'll see the nurturing, compassionate side of her because she's got three kids, let's say. Okay. At some point, he recognizes that she's not really quite the way he imagines it, but maybe he recognizes that that capacity is within him, and he develops that on his own. So he becomes a more complete, balanced person by having that. And if through the series of relationships you notice the things you find attractive in someone and notice that they are in you, then that ceases to be part of your anima or animus, and you aren't as excited imagining seeing that in another person. And so theoretically, the path of this is all to get you to the point where you find balance and you're sufficiently whole as a person that you don't feel like you need to get with somebody. You don't get this, I believe the movie's Jerry Maguire, you know, and there's this, you know, wonderful moment where, you know, the woman in the movie goes, oh, you complete me, right? And you get to this point where you no longer are looking for that because you feel complete. And then people who are complete really aren't necessarily out looking for a relationship. Now, they might be interested in a partner. And I'm not bold enough to claim that I'm to this place because I know I'm not. So I'm conjecturing here. But theoretically, you get to this place where you feel complete enough as a person where you say, well, I don't really need a partner. I'm not feeling lonely. I'm not feeling like I need this, that, or the other thing. So what you look for instead, if you're looking at all, is, hey, I just met this person who also seems very easy to get along with, and together we can do things that are more than either of us can do individually. And you have a multiplier effect. And so you recognize that you go from this place of I need someone else to feel complete to I feel complete, and two people together can amplify each other's ability to get results in the world in whatever way that anybody chooses that. Getting through that phase isn't something I've ever done, so I can't really speak to it that much.
But I understand that, and I do know and think that most people you know, want to feel complete in themselves, but also I know that more than less, people want to have a significant other one in their life. And I guess what I'm thinking is that probably the main reason people don't feel like they have to have someone or want someone in their life is maybe they think they'll have to give up their freedom or something for that. In fact, I was watching TV this morning and they were talking about relationships and everything, and there was one woman who, out of all of them, wasn't in a relationship or didn't want to have one. So she said, "I'm really happy with who I am, what I'm doing, and you know." And she said, "I just, I'm selfish. I like doing things my way, and this is, you know, where I'm at."
And that's not what I'm talking about when I'm saying balanced.
Right.
Yeah, someone who, and it's always dangerous when we start throwing labels onto experience, because experience is something that's unique to every individual. And to even have someone say, "Well, I'm selfish. I like to have things the way I like to have them." This is someone who hasn't really gotten that far in the world of growth yet, because I know when I go out on the road, especially if I'm on my motorcycle, I can be as selfish as I want things the way I want them. There's still other cars going slower than I want to go when I'm on a nice twisty mountain road on my motorcycle. And if we were to truly say that we're okay with things the way they are, we'll enjoy whatever experience we have as we have it, regardless of what it is. And in fact, we enjoy being around other people because that's kind of why we're here. If people don't have an opportunity to serve other people, and this is well documented in a variety of places, that the happiest people are people who feel as though they're getting to be of service to others. They, you know, they have an inner sense of knowing that they are just, you know, doing what they're here to do, and everything is good. So there's this strange place where you start to get comfort or satisfaction or balance, and you have to become increasingly honest with yourself. This is one of the challenges of growth is that you have to become very honest with yourself, and where you say, "Well, instead of me getting with someone who's just going to piss me off, I'll just choose now to be happier on my own and ignore or say I'm not going to be with somebody." And then that's where we actually have to start dealing with our shadow. So every time we get in a relationship, we have to deal with our anima or animus, because that's who that other person is. And when we are by ourselves, we have to deal with our shadow, those things that we say we are not. So let's suppose someone has been in a bunch of unsatisfactory relationships. They explode in a variety of spectacular ways, as they often do. And I decide, I'm just not going to be with anybody. Being with someone else, that's not me. Now, of course, they usually don't say it quite that way. They say, like, "That's not me." Or they might even have some very colorful language to associate with the idea of what they think of being with another person. Usually a word that starts with F, as I recall. And that's your shadow. That's the not you. That's everything that you reject. And one of my favorite examples of a shadow is when you get somebody who is very nutty about the idea of murder. And they say, "I would never kill anybody else. I would never do this, that, the other thing about somebody else." And I don't like to talk about, you know, essentially very negative things. It's usually a very good example because, like, you know, in America we have people that are on both sides of this debate about capital punishment. It is what it is. And if you say, "I would never kill somebody else," with a lot of emotional charge to it, most people are not sufficiently pacifists to actually make that assertion. They're not Quakers or Amish, people who would allow themselves to be killed rather than kill somebody else. And so just say you're a mom and someone's attacking your child. Are you going to let that attacker, you know, go? Or are you going to defend your child by any means necessary? This is what it means to have a shadow. You say that you reject something, but there's some parallel situation in your life where you absolutely would do that, and you're just denying it. You know, whether it's, you know, steal, commit something that people usually have in their mind is an evil act. And I'm not evil, I'm good, therefore I would never do an evil thing, and all these things that I consider to be evil, I would not do. And so when you're on your own, you have to get in touch with the fact that you have this thing that is not you, but actually is you. You're just not, again, in balance about it. So, you know, could you ever don the suit of the warrior and go to war? And for most people, the answer is yes, given the right circumstances. And when they accept that, the circumstances tend not to come around. Everybody knows about the law of attraction, and emotions are magnetic. And if you have a lot of emotion about something that you reject about yourself, then you're going to get a chance to see that within yourself. And everything that we do.
I got that. Absolutely. I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just whatever it is, it's going to be there. And see, the universe is incredibly kind, you know. So, you know, before we incarnate, everybody's sitting up there wherever they sit, they're doing whatever they do. I don't remember what it was like. So, you know, we're just hanging out, right? We're playing cards, smoking, drinking, you know, having a good time. And all of a sudden somebody says, well, you know, I guess I got to get to work. What lessons am I going to lay out for myself in this particular trip on in incarnation? And you drop them in the slot, and you put them in there, and you get this wonderful piece of sausage, and you go incarnate, and then the lessons are there. You've already set them up. You're going to learn the lessons, or not. But the universe is just a fabulous mechanism to provide you with experiences where you have an opportunity to learn the lessons you're here to learn. And, you know, if you get the lessons quickly, then things tend to go easier. And if you don't get the lessons quickly, then, you know, the volume gets a little bit louder each time until you finally pick up the lesson. You know, whether it's a whisper, a club, a baseball bat, or a creosote-soaked railroad tie up against the head, I don't know. Everybody gets a chance to learn their lessons. And that's really what the shadow and the animus are for us.
So one thing that you're saying too is it's important for us to be in relationship. That's how we really work on ourselves, right?
We're always in relationship.
Yeah.
Everybody is always in relationship with something. And so that's where in various traditions, there's the idea of the solo path and the relationship path. So the solo path is I'm going to learn my lessons by just looking at the world around me and not be with another human being. Or I am going to be in relationship with another human being, and I'm going to be with someone who, you know, if I have an emotional charge about something, that my most loving partner will, you know, get me to the place of wanting to strangle him or her because, you know, they'll do something that I absolutely hate about myself, and I'll put it on them and say, well, you're doing X. And it's really, you know, they're just doing what I would do. And if I don't own it, then, you know, it's just going to keep happening.
And you know how we do not want to have time on our own stuff. I understand that, too. Well, this is so interesting, and I love what you're sharing with us. I hope people that are listening are getting the message, too. And the importance of relationships, and that we are always in a relationship. And so someone comes to see you, and they're having a problem with their relationship, and they say, well, I put a lot of interest and time and energy in this relationship, and it's just not working, and I'm starting to see that we're just total opposites. And you know, and at first it looked like we had so much in common, and now we don't. And where would you go from there?
Oh, well, so let me outline the basic model by which we work on all this stuff.
Okay.
As individuals, we have to identify, do I just have an emotional charge on something? Now, I used to have this horrible problem with road rage. It would drive, you know, my former wife, you know, learned to deal with it, but then I had a string of girlfriends, and they all just, like, get really upset with me because I will yell and scream at other cars. And so there's a lot of things where we just have a charge. And so in those cases, we have to do a lot of emotional release. We just got to, you know, get over it, okay? Then the next big level we have to get to is after we've done enough release, then we can actually start looking at shadow and anima and animus aspects of who we are. Now, if somebody comes to me and they say, I've got this problem in my relationship, the first thing I want to know about their relationship is how are you two connected? What brought you together? So if we look at the path of manifestation, how we create things in the world, it starts out as a spark of energy, which we would put at a spiritual level. And we have a mental level where we're thinking about things. We have an emotional level where we're feeling about things. And then we have the physical level where we actually have physical reality. So there's two basic paths that people in the world take to create a relationship. And in our very materialistic society we live in today, it usually starts the physical. So a man or a woman see each other and they go, rawr, I want to hit that. And they get together and then they have fun for a while. And they might have some degree of emotional bonding or not, depending on how, you know, if it's a, you know, an overnighter, then they probably don't. If they wait, you know, if they obey the 3-date rule before sex, then they might actually get a little emotional bonding going on before they have sex. So they're kind of starting at the bottom, and they might build a relationship where they build an emotional bond, they build a mental bond, they build a spiritual bond, and then they stay together. Or they might start at the spiritual, and they say, well, we really agree on spiritual things, right? We each agree that people are spiritual beings and we have spiritual paths and we're compatible in this area. And then they bring it down to the mental, the emotional, and the physical. So the first thing I want to know is how did this relationship start? Where, on what plane did they start at? Spiritual, mental, emotional, or physical? And the next thing I'm going to want to know is, are they spiritually compatible? So in my school, the model we use, and for all the people I've talked with and everything I've ever looked at, this model does seem to hold. You have to have a compatibility at the spiritual level, and then you have to have difference at the mental level, which is to say if you two agree on absolutely everything all the time and there's never any actual discussion which leads to learning and growth at a mental level, then there's no polarity there. There's no opportunity for the energy of the spiritual to begin to divide. And that'll be more clearly important in a moment when I get down to the physical. As long as there's a good emotional connection where you've got some similarities and some differences so that it doesn't stagnate, so there's, you know, a discussion that keeps energy moving, then you come down to the emotional. And are you emotionally compatible? If you've got one person who's, you know, fundamentally happy and another person who's fundamentally sad, they're not going to get along. The happy one's going to be like, why are you always crabby? And the sad one's going to be like, why are you always happy? You're pissing me off. They're going to say the same thing to each other. It's not going to work out. So there's got to be some emotional compatibility. Same way there has to be spiritual compatibility, you have to have an emotional compatibility. You have to have some basic level of emotional stability about yourself that and your partner so that you get along and you're not constantly rubbing each other the wrong way. And we come down to the physical. And this is why I love the system that we have men and women and they have different body parts and they fit. And that's where the charge comes in. When you have the differences at the mental level, energy comes in at the spiritual, you have mental discussion. And I think most people have heard this, you know, men are happy to just get right to it when sex comes around, but women usually like to talk some first. And that's where the charge builds. You build up this charge between the two sides in a relationship, comes down through the emotional, and you're still compatible, so the emotion can charge up the differences. And then you come to the physical, and like, we're different. We gotta bring this energy together and make it move and share it between ourselves and let it move around. So when I'm talking to people and I want to know how the relationship is going, I'm really looking for, do they have that? And if you don't have that, it's going to be very difficult to make a relationship work. Now, if they have that, and if they've got a certain basic level of emotional balance within them, then and only then can they actually start working directly on shadow and animus issues. In our school, we do not recommend that people try to resolve or integrate or do anything with their shadow and their animus right away. Because if you're the kind of person who's got a lot of emotional issues and baggage, and then you suddenly try to jump into, you know, the very deep pool of integrating the you with the not you, it's going to be very disorienting, and I have no idea what's going to happen there. I don't think it's a good idea. So there's a lot of emotional release you got to look at. And so you say to yourself, well, we're not getting along because of X. Well, what is X? Okay. She doesn't treat the kids the way I think the kids should be treated, or we have a disagreement about how we should raise our children. Okay. That's a negotiation. That's something at the mental level, and you just need to negotiate it. You need to find a harmony, a place where you have the same agreement. That isn't about figuring out who you are. That's just the sort of thing where you're having a disagreement. And there's a book by a guy named John Gottman, and this is the one where he postulates the four horsemen of the apocalypse in communications in a relationship. And so most relationships fall into this category where people just need to communicate. They're not talking yet, you know, or they're not talking enough. And one of the rules I have with my girlfriend is that if something were to ever come up that where one of us would want to actually get out of the relationship, there has to be a conversation first. So we talk about the anima and the animus, but a lot of people aren't quite there yet. You have to have these basic ground rules of stability in the relationship that includes the communication. There has to be some reason why you want to be together. You have to like each other. You have to have at some point in your life a desire to have been together, and you still maintain respect for each other. You talk. I mean, all these things that you have to go through before you start saying, well, this is an anima or animus issue or a shadow issue. And in fact, those are things that if you talk, a lot of them will resolve on their own. Because you just become consciously aware, oh, you're telling me I'm not treating the children with the same kind of compassionate, nurturing respect you think I should. Oh, my goodness, you're right. I think I'll do that. I will find that within me, and I do it. And boom, it just happens, right? You don't have to go through some magical, mystical process where you recognize that that is not who you are or that's something you wish you had. It's just you're with someone who brings it up for you and says, oh, hey, Here's a plate. It's got some stuff on it, and I think you need to deal with what's on the plate. And you just do. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I love exactly everything you shared. I totally understand it, and I know that people that are listening tonight on the show are getting it too. This is great. This is great information. Drew, we've got several people online. We've got about 20 minutes left. Would you like to take a call now and see if somebody has a question?
Let's have some fun.
Okay. I'm going to bring Ivatar in. Hello, Ivatar.
Hi, Pam. How are you?
We're great.
That's good. Hello to your guests.
Hello, Ivatar.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And I'm listening to the conversation. And I must say that I'm a non-traditional kind of person. And when I say non-traditional, first of all, I really don't agree with a lot of what society says. You know, I'll give you an example, like falling in love. You know, I don't believe people fall in love, because if you fall in love, you can fall out of love. And you know, what I see in a lot of relationships, the people, I mean, even before they get in relationships, where their focus is, you know, what does he look like? How much money does he have? You know, what kind of car does he drive? I mean, all these materialistic things, they have this whole list of things. They haven't talked about, you know, what kind of heart does he have? You know, what kind of soul does he have? You know, what kind of connection does he have with the Creator? You know, and to me, a lot of these relationships are already doomed before they even get started, because the perception of where the focus is from the very beginning. And I've been celibate for a very long time, and I choose to be celibate because I felt like there's issues, whatever my issues were, that I need to work on myself and heal whatever animus parts of myself, the shadow side of myself, so that when I attract, you know, this person into my life, you know, he would have done the same, and we'll see each other not so much from, you know, connected at the hip, or what we have or what we don't have, or how much money we have or how intelligent we are, but to be able to see each other for who we truly are, look at our hearts, be able to look at, to see the quality of my heart, be able to see the quality of my soul and my spirit.
You exactly nailed the way most people do it. So, you know, I said, you know, a lot of people today, they start their relationships on the physical. It doesn't have to be sex. Now, we have a lot of people who say it's okay for a woman to want to know that a man has a good job, makes plenty of money, blah, 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 whatever the physical manifestation she's looking for, on the basis of, we're saying, she's looking for a man that will, you know, be able to support children, create a home, provide for a safe environment to raise children, right? And that's all well and good, and it's still focusing on the physical. Whereas, as you said, you want to see, does he have a good heart? And that's more of the spiritual side. Is this a person who I can be compatible with because, well, you're not a raging materialistic asshole? And the model in my school is that if you start at the spiritual, we consider that to be the highest plane, spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical, and whatever occurs on one plane controls what happens on the planes below it. And I'm a absolute believer in that, because from the earliest time in my career as a computer software engineer, if you want to build a system, you have to cut it up in layers, and the layers at the top control the layers below. I mean, the layers below might do more of the things, but the layers at the top provide the direction for what the system is actually supposed to do. So when I first heard this concept for how a relationship works, is like, well, that's how you design a computer system. I mean, anything you build that is a system, anything that humans engineer, works that way. You have, you know, layers of activity and action, and what's on top controls what's below. So if you start a relationship where you're checking for a spiritual connection first, it's more likely to proceed. Now, where I think it's interesting that you're saying you've chosen to be celibate and not in a relationship, and I'm guessing you're putting those two together. It's
right.
It's what we were saying earlier. If you go through a period of unsatisfying relationships, you decide to reject the idea of being in a relationship. And I've been there. Last summer I had a great summer where I was two different times. I said to myself, I am so happy. I love being alone. I don't need anybody. I am done. I'm perfect. And then within days, I've got a new woman in my life. Like, poof, there she is, and she's awesome. It's like, you know, and that's just kind of the way it works, you know. You clear enough of your shit so that you decide, oh, well, I'm done. I'm complete as I am. And then, whap, the universe says, okay, you're ready for the next lesson. Here it comes. And since I'm the kind of guy who likes to have a girlfriend, poof, you know, and then my life turns to, like, weirdness, right? I'm like, I don't know what to do now. She's making me crazy, blah, 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 blah. And I think it's hilarious that just this morning, so my girlfriend and I were at a house that she owns that she needs to sell, and I could see her in the process of disconnecting from this house that she bought with her ex-husband, and there were dreams associated with it, right? And I'm watching the dream die right in front of me, right? I'm being like, wow, this is going to be interesting when we get home. And then this morning she's telling me how, you know, I've never really fallen in love. I don't think you can do that. That's a bad idea. And then she's recently, you know, learned about shadow and animus at a new level. And so she's saying, well, I don't think I've ever done that, and it's a bad idea. And then I'm like, And I always love, I mean, she's not here, so she's not going to hear me say this. So, so I'm going to boldly say, I love it when people get a hold of a new toy and they immediately want to say, well, this is where I'm at with the new toy. I'm an expert. And it's like, you just got it. You don't even know how the toy works yet. But you're cute and I love you. And she's like, so I've never fallen in love with that like that, right? And it's like, okay, you're missing the point here. Falling in love is, so like you said, falling in love implies you can fall out of love. Well, that means you've chosen to create it that way.
Yes.
That's your shadow at work. That's the me and the not me. Mm-hmm. See, I'm the kind of person who doesn't fall in love. That's not me. Because those people also fall out of love.
Okay.
And they're not recognizing how this is their choice.
Mm-hmm.
The energy is going to move between these polarities of what you've created. If you think that falling in love means you're going to fall out of love, I guarantee you that's what you're going to experience because that's the way you see the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if on the other
hand,
you either
love somebody or you don't. Okay. Just like my ex-husband that recently passed. We got divorced, but I didn't stop loving him. We just chose.
Exactly.
So, you know, I don't choose to deal with our relationship on this level, but we remain friends. So I don't understand this falling in and out of love. I don't understand that concept.
Well, so the way most people would view falling in love is that animus projection. I meet this person.
Oh, okay.
I see in them the ideal opposite partner, and I make a fool of myself to be with that person.
Mm-hmm.
And after some period of time that usually occurs, you know, days, weeks, months, and the honeymoon period is astrologically considered to be around 6 months, you get to the point where the counter evidence that this person is not actually who you imagine them to be becomes overwhelming and you have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, in a brilliant act of rationalization, I really wasn't in love with that person. I just wanted to get, you know, play the horizontal thing or whatever. You know, whatever it was that was the physical thing that provided some charge, you're like, no. It was just that. It wasn't real, whatever you want to say. And so if you create the dichotomy that you can fall in love that way and that you can fall out of love that way, then that's what you're going to experience. And so what I was explaining to my girlfriend this morning is that, well, just because you're not doing an animus projection on somebody to fall in love doesn't mean you can't fall in love. Just what is the opposite of falling in love? To me, the opposite of falling in love means investing in a fabulous long-term relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I start with, I fell in love with this woman as soon as I started to see who she is. And as I see who she is more and more, the energy moves to, I want to continue investing in this woman. And then when I get all the way to the far polarity, you know, it's usually that there's some shit going on that's making me crazy, and I'm like, well, I really want to be with this person, so I'm going to keep working through it. This is my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I deal with my stuff, and the energy comes back around in the circle again, and all of a sudden we're falling in love at a new level. And so we spiral up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the challenge is to get yourself a partner who will play that game with you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't. You know, you get what you get. I believe the joke is life is a box of chocolates. You know,
okay.
I was just thinking about this in the shower this morning. I personally am a guy, I have a very high sex drive. I like to have sex every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if I talk to women, lots of women in different ages, and they're like, you know, well, you're not going to keep doing that after 6 months. You're going to get bored. I'm like, not me. I like to have sex every day. I don't care how long we're together. That's why I'm with this person. I want to have sex with them. It's very simple, and most people don't understand this. And so one of the dangers is, you get, you know, in my case, this is a bad strategy, because if I get with this person, I'm not going to know for 6 months or a year whether she's going to really want to continue with that or whether she's going to say, you know, I've had enough of this stuff. Once a week is plenty. We have other things to do with our time, and I'm like, no, I want to spend my time with you. And I've also discovered it's very bad for me to get together with somebody at the end of the summer, because then there's all winter, and she's thinking, all you want to do is spend all your time with me. And I said, summer and motorcycling season isn't here yet. Just wait. wait till my mistress in the garage is ready to go, and I'm going to be like, it's time for a ride. This is why I like to get girlfriends who like to go motorcycling. You want to meet somebody who wants to do the same things you want to do.
Right, that's true.
So you're looking for that compatibility and spiritual level. Here's what I want to do on a spiritual level. Here's where we have differences on the mental level, and we challenge each other in our thinking. Mm-hmm. Here's where we're compatible on the emotional level, and then you bring that charge down into the physical. So it's all, and then everybody works the way they work.
You know, another thing I think a lot of people don't even know what love is. They don't even know. They just like your girlfriend was saying, she said she don't think she ever experienced. I think that was an honest statement that she made, because if you look at the behavior, you know that that's not love. You know it's not love.
You got to decide that for yourself.
Yeah.
Love is whatever it is. Some people think it's having some altruistic self-abdication, or not prioritizing yourself. And other people say, well, if I don't take care of myself, how can I love someone else? Love is it's whatever you decide it is. And again, it's everybody has on an individual path. Which, speaking of which, I'm surprised Pam hasn't jumped in here and said I'm talking to you for too long.
Well, we've got more people on the show too. I would like for you to talk to. I'm just listening. I understand what you're talking about. I think it's great. And you know, I always feel like when you're talking and you're sharing, that everybody's getting it. You know, that if people are listening and going, "Yeah, that's the same to me too," and "Yeah, that's me," and that's exactly why I'm just kind of absorbing everything you're saying, because I think it's really important. And to understand relationships as well as much as we can, and because I think we get so many expectations of relationships that are wrong, and we miscommunicate. Boy, the communication factor is the big thing.
Yeah, this stuff is simple, but it's not straightforward. Or maybe it's straightforward and it's not simple. There's lots of things we got to do, and you got to go do it. That's the thing. You have to go be open to experience.
Yeah. Go for the ride. Well, okay,
go for the ride.
Guitar. That's it.
Okay.
You know, it's a journey. I'm going to go ahead, and there's one more person. Let's bring Jay in from Canada, and
okay. And
let's see what Jay's question is. Hold on. Hello?
Hello. How's it going?
Great.
Hey, Drew. Hey, pretty good. I was listening to your conversation. This is a great conversation from a guy's perspective. Usually it's the other way around, so from a female perspective. So this is actually really good. Actually, it's really informative. So for me, my question for you is regarding expectation. I thought about this, you know, when we go into expectation. I just wonder if it's actually a natural thing for that to happen between the two sexes, because I find that we're such in a world where if we don't get someone calling us every 30 seconds to remind us that we're loved or something like that, that the expectations are huge. I just wondered about how that perspective of conditioning right now is changing relationships, because I find it's really, really punching the relationships right now in some sort of way. Just wondering what your thoughts about that.
Well, that's a huge and wonderful question. I'm going to start my answer with, let us remember that Buddhism will tell us that expectations are the path to suffering. And so the first thing you got to do when you have expectations is you have to, and as I'm thinking about you and your question, I'm like, what I'm hearing is not, what do I expect of my partner, as in what is a negotiated agreement between us, but what is all the societal cruft that has been dumped on me through the media and other people talking and that stuff about what I should expect about a relationship. Okay? So one of the keys is you've got to let go of what everyone else tells you is right for you and recognize what is right for you as your choice. And again, by being in a relationship, you get to begin to examine this. So you get to a place where, what should I expect from this person? Well, so I'm a guy, I'm with a girl. If I expect her to be a certain way and I don't tell her that so that we can discuss it, then often my expectations are unmet, because I'm just unconsciously thinking, why aren't you cooking my dinner? Now, in the case of my girlfriend, who happens to be Japanese, she likes doing that stuff. And I've never had a girlfriend like this before. To me, it's like, when I'm living on my own, I have eggs in the morning, I have either eggs and a burger at lunch, and then I have a burger at dinner. And my life is good. And green leafy things don't come into the picture at all. Those are like, if I'm really, really feeling ambitious, there might be some color on the plate. And she likes doing these things. And her expectation is that she gets to do this for her partner. She, early on she was telling me her favorite thing is to have her partner come home from the workday and she says, "Hi, honey, how was your day? Here's your dinner." Now, if I make jokes about this in front of, Western-thinking women, they get a little uppity because they're like, well, you shouldn't expect that from her. And it's like, it's not me. That's the way she wants to do things. So you have to become aware of these discrepancies between what you think you expect, what the other person in the relationship thinks they expect, and who's in charge of dealing with that. And this happens in every aspect. If you think a great relationship means you're having sex every day, or you're talking every day, or you're going to the store every day, and you're like, let's say that you're in a relationship with someone who expects you to go to the store to go grocery shopping, and that's not your thing. Okay?
Right.
You need to talk about it, and then you come to an agreement. And then instead of having expectations, you have let me rephrase that. Instead of having unspoken and unconscious expectations that are leading to a festering wound or a cold sore, you actually have a discussion about something, and then you can say, if it's not being met, well, we discussed this, and you said you'd do this, and you're not doing it, so what's the deal here? And then you get to a point where it's not really about anger or fear or any negative emotion. It's just like, well, I have these boundaries. And this is a very high degree of relationship that I was just discussing with my teacher a couple of weeks ago. And it's when you get to the point where your emotions aren't driving your behaviors, you still have these things we call boundaries. I mean, what do I think is right or wrong, or how do I think things need to be? What are the steps that have to occur to be on a path to success? How does the universe work for me? And you get to this point in a relationship where people either operate within each other's boundaries or they don't. And if they don't, then they're able to actually separate in a manner that in the Hawaiian system we call pono. Pono means right, and not right as in right or wrong, but it's good for everybody. It's ecological. It's what's going to work. It's what's effective. And so you get to this place where you find the harmony in how you want to do things. So really, expectations are, you've got to figure out what's the positive or negative expression of expectations, and ironically, the negative expression of expectations is to not express them, and the positive expression is to actually express them and actually get things out in the open, which is why I go back to the Gottman research, which is that people have to talk. If you have a relationship, there has to be something that brought two people together, and they want to be together, and they're maintaining a level of respect and concern for one another that has some communication in it. In the case of my former spouse and I, I hate to say it, but there wasn't enough sex in the relationship, and it just didn't work for me, and so we had to split up because I wanted to have sex and she didn't. So, I mean, I really like her, but, that didn't work for me. So you have to get this place where you talk about things.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense quite a bit. So the spiritual plane is really key about this, because I always go to the Matrix. I always say, you know thyself. Eh? I mean, I always say, I said it in a blog post, you know, love is blind. Well, sure, it's blind if you don't know yourself. So, and I think that's pretty key also. The spiritual plane is really important. It sounds like it goes downward, eh? Well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you think of spiritual as the energy coming in from source, the direction from the leader, whatever it is, again, I'm a computer engineer. I start with, I want this program to do X. Everything that then is below that in the design of the program is to achieve that highest level goal that it does X. If it's supposed to calculate some report for a business, then everything it does has to support that goal. And that's right. The same thing as having a spiritual bond or purpose in a relationship. What is the spiritual purpose of us to be together? And one of the things that ultimately is the spiritual purpose of a lot of relationships, especially if you just started on the physical plane, is to discover something about yourselves at a limited level. You don't put intention into why you're together. It's just like we're gonna get together and do things until it blows up. And that actually is the spiritual purpose of the relationship, is to force you to either face something within you or not. And it's unconscious. The spiritual purpose behind something will always be fulfilled at some point, because that is how we set things up when we incarnate.
That's interesting, because I was wondering also about the Ho'oponopono regarding forgiveness. Does that play a really big part in relationships too? Like,
of course, I do it every day.
Okay.
The ultimately, the goal in a relationship, if you really want it to last a long time, at some point you have to respect the other person for who they are. And so the forgiveness process, Ho'oponopono, is great for forgiving, but it's also a way to see someone newly. See, if you are seeing them through the lens of something that you're upset about and you haven't forgiven them, then that's how you see them. But if you let go of all the stuff and then you break the connection and then you can start again, you get to begin to see them as they are on a, you know, every time you do Ho'oponopono.
Mm. Interesting. Very interesting.
Now, Ho'oponopono is something you do all the time. I know a guy who does it 10, 20, 30 times a day. He'll do it 70 times a day some days, he says.
Really?
I said, is that for everything or just for your relationship? And he said, oh, that's just for the relationship. All the other stuff is more. Yeah, with some people you're with, you know, you got a lot of friction. You got to let stuff go for a while. And he's been with his wife for 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
It just becomes natural. It's like breathing. One breath in, and then you let it go. You know, Ho'oponopono is a process you do in your mind. You do it enough, your unconscious mind gets really good at it, and it happens really fast.
And sometimes it's also the art of surrender, you know, so the right, too. I just wondered about that, just surrendering, just like you said, just it's not working anymore. They're on their own path. They need my help. Yeah, a little chip in there and things like that. So it works something like that, too.
Oh, yeah, surrender is essential in anything. The metaphor I like to use for surrender is sometimes we'd like things to be the way we want them to be. We have this little ego that says, well, I'm the dictator, you must do things the way I say, and the world is like, no, I don't. And so let's suppose you want to put meat on the table and you're going to go hunt a deer. Now, deer are relatively easy to find, so getting one would not be that hard. I mean, there were just three in my backyard just a few moments ago.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you're going to go hunting during hunting season, and if you don't get a deer, whose fault is that? If you do not surrender to the process of how you hunt a deer, you will not get a deer. And you can complain all you want, but that's the way it is. So there, whatever it is in life, there's something to which you must surrender that is the reality of how things work. So there's things we can control and influence by the way we think, and then there's things that we can't. And the things that we can't, you got to surrender. I think people in AA learn that. God grant me the wisdom to know the difference between the things I can change and the things I can't.
Yeah, and it's other people too, right? So, yeah.
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 It's really very empowering. I mean, if someone else is a way that I don't like, it's not my problem. I don't have to do anything about it. I just have to decide, well, you know, I don't. You are a lying sack of shit and treat people badly. I don't need you in my life, and poof, they're gone. They don't call you, they don't send you messages, and you don't talk to them anymore. And you don't feel bad about it because it's like, well, you know, that's not right for me.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting about this, you know, conversation that we're having, because I often see, like, for me, I'm not in a relationship right now, but I also see, like, other relationships where the guy's almost like a dog, and then they're trying to change the dog's behavior.
You know, I don't understand that one. You know, there's a lot of, I've heard as many theories about that situation as I've seen relationships like that. You know, people say to me, oh, some women want a challenge, or this guy would be perfect if he was just like so, or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that I think there's an adage in one of my books that says, the last time a woman can easily change a man is when he's in his diapers. And it's true. And the fact is that when one person in a relationship wants the other person to change, it can be a negotiated agreement. Like, you know, my girlfriend, you need to spend more time thinking about your finances. Well, if the amount of time I spend on my finances is zero, pretty true. You know, if I'm not a trust fund baby, I probably need to spend some time managing my finances. But that's not a change. That's, you know, you need to do this if you want to, you know, have a decent life. You want to get some harmony in your life. On the other hand, if it's like, you need to quit doing that thing that you love more than anything else because that doesn't work for me, then that's like, well, no. That's her boundary. And she just needs to say, you know, this doesn't work for me, and I don't want to be with you. And he says, okay, bye. I'm going to go ride my motorcycle.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that's either in a person. Okay, I want this other person to change because I have a charge about people who do that. I have an emotional imbalance in that area. Or it's a boundary for them.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And you can tell whether it's a boundary or an emotional charge by whether or not there's the emotional charge. If somebody gets upset with you because you do something they don't like, and the amount that they get upset about it is out of proportion with it. I mean, women who go nutty about a guy who leaves the toilet seat up,
mm-hmm.
or the guy that goes nutty because the woman is saying, would you please put the seat down? You know, one of them, you know, has an emotional charge, and one of them is speaking rationally. Or they're both speaking irrationally.
Right.
I mean, I know if I get up in the middle of the night and I want to go sit down in the toilet and I find the seat is up, it's, you know, a little disconcerting to find my butt cheeks dropping at an unpleasantly low altitude.
This is a great conversation. And I think we're all getting a big picture here. And it is. Everything you're saying, this is so good. And so we either have an emotional charge, or what was the other thing?
Or you have a boundary.
Boundary, right. And the boundary could be, don't leave the commode seat up, right?
I just expect you to be courteous enough to leave the seat down. And can we negotiate that you'll do that? Yeah. That has no charge. It's just a courtesy.
I like that.
Or whatever it is.
Uh-huh. So what we need to do when we're in a relationship, if we can, is say, okay, I have an issue here. This bothers me. I'm not going to get emotionally charged up about it, but I'm going to say, you know, hey, this bothers me, and could we work this out and get it, you know, where we both feel comfortable with it.
Yeah, or you can even have the emotional charge about it, and for some people it works, have a big fight over nothing, but then they work it out.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's different. Everybody has a different strategy for how they deal with whatever that's going on. And if there's not a foundation of communication and mutual respect, then the relationship is doomed. It cannot ever go.
Yeah.
You know, at the core of every relationship, whether it's intimate partners, boss, employee, friends, whatever, if there has to be the basis of mutual respect for each other as persons, as human beings, as opposed to objects. No, in the infinite wisdom that a friend's mom gave to him on his wedding, the night before his wedding, his mom says to him, "A woman is more than a place to put your penis." And if that's how you view your intimate partner, that's not really respectful to the person as a human being. It's not going to go very far.
I like that.
So really there's that ultimate foundation of respect for yourself and respect for others as human beings. And as long as you have that, pretty much everything else can be worked out, because that's a spiritual kind of thing.
Okay, I like that. I'm writing that down. Okay. Well, what a great evening we've had. Well, our time is up, and Drew, just keep learning all this neat stuff, or just keep sharing it with us. I want to get you back on the show again. Jay, do you have anything else you want to ask real quick?
No, I'm good. We had a great conversation. Thanks, Drew. It's always look forward to talking to you again on different subjects, but thanks for the insight. Thank you so much.
Great. It's fun for me. Yeah,
okay. Also, I want to remind everyone, if you want to talk to Drew, you can contact him at 206-914-0127. He has a website, drew@drewnicholson.com. And I would think that if you've listened to the show, you might want to come back on and listen to it again, because there's a lot of things that were said that has a lot of meaning that about relationships that we can start working with. This has been a great evening. Drew, do you have anything you want to share at the end of this talk?
Too many random things. Have respect for each other as human beings, and everything goes great in the world.
Okay. I'm with you on that. And Annie, did you have anything you want to share this evening? We're getting ready to close.
I just wanted to say it was great to have Drew on, and thanks for all of your insight that you shared with everyone. And I look forward to having you on again. Everyone have a great
day. I look forward to it.
Yes.
Thank
you. Me too, honey. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.